Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Curious George is one of the most popular children's storybook series of all time. Millions and millions of homes know the stories of the mischievous little monkey and the man in the big yellow hat. The story of the escape of the book's Jewish creators from Nazi-occupied France is less well-known. On this Passover, as another story of Jewish escape is celebrated in many homes around the country, we thought we'd hear the story of H.A. and Margaret Ray, creators of Curious George. This hour, On Point, the story behind the story of one mischievous little storybook monkey. You can join the conversation. Did you grow up with Curious George? Can you read his creator's story of escape somewhere between the lines? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Francisco in California is Claudia Nassen, curator of the Jewish Museum in New York City. The museum's new exhibit, Curious George Saves the Day, The Art of Margaret and H.A. Ray, just opened. Claudia Nassen, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So I'm sure it's quite an exhibit if you've got this wonderful artwork that everybody knows, and I know you've had access to a lot from the University of Southern Mississippi, where this collection of their personal things ended up. But you've brought this to your museum. What's the heart of the story that you wanted to convey by bringing it in, Claudia?
Well, it's a fascinating story. I was drawn in because, we're always looking for good stories at the museum, and this was one of them. I also was very interested in looking at their art through the lens of their escape story, which hadn't been done. And I had people look again at this very familiar stories, but with different information that they didn't know before. I think that was, what brought me excitement about getting into the show and getting to look at the works. And researching at the Grumman was fabulous. It was just an embarrassment of riches. It was hard to choose, but you had to just draw the line somewhere.
This is at the Grumman Children's Literature Collection at the University of Southern Mississippi. Margaret Ray, who was the last of the two to die, left their entire collection to the university. We should introduce us to the two of them, H.A. and Margaret Ray. Everybody knows Curious George, but not everybody knows them beyond just the name on the books.
That's right. First of all, their last name wasn't always Ray. He was Hans Augusto Reyesbach, and she was Margarete Waldstein. They were both German Jews born in Hamburg. Mm-hmm. He was born in 1898. She was born in 1906. They knew each other. The families knew each other from Hamburg. However, H.A. Ray left Germany in the mid-1920s. It was a hard time. The Weimar
economically
years were...
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It was, exciting culturally, but economically quite volatile. And so he went to Brazil. He had relatives there who had offered him a job in an import-export firm, and he spent a decade there into the mid-30s.
I've read him describing that time in Brazil as selling bathtubs up and down the Amazon.
That's correct. That gave him ample opportunity to probably sketch monkeys in their, natural habitat. He didn't relish the work. He said he couldn't illustrate the business letters, so he was a little bit,
bored with that.
Exactly. So here comes Margaret Ray, Margaret Waldstein, to provide some excitement into his life.
She joined him in the 1930s when Nazism was on the rise in Germany, of course.
Right. She actually, what's interesting about the two of them is that, he never got to have some artistic training because of the depressed economy in Germany. He never attended art school. Mm-hmm. However, she stayed in Germany and did attend the Bauhaus and studied photography and art, attended the Art Academy in Dusseldorf, also had short time in Berlin. She had even her work exhibited in Berlin. She worked in photographic studios, in graphic studios. So she had great exposure to art and design. So when she learned that he was there, and it was getting very hard, it was 35 already, Hitler had risen to power in 33, it was very hard for her to continue working. She decided to go to Rio and look him up there. And they soon started working together. They founded some kind of advertising studio, and she would do the writing and he would and photographing, and he would illustrate. They worked for a few months there, and eventually they got married.
1935, they're married. They've got their life in Rio. They've got some pet monkeys, that, not inconsequentially. They decide to take a very long, what turned out to be a very long honeymoon in Paris. 1936, they sailed to Paris. She knit sweaters for those monkeys, for the, what obviously the
marmosets.
The marmosets, but for the ship, for the voyage. They did not survive the voyage, however, but here they are. Now in Paris, living on Montmartre, on the top floor of the Terrasse Hotel, and they're there for 4 years. 4 years taking them right into the storm of World War II.
That's correct. It's very exciting. I mean, like, they're basically there from, you know, 36 to 40. It's an incredible time to be in Paris. They said, you know, of course, if World War II wouldn't have broken out, they would have stayed there. They relish being in Paris. I mean, you see that both through H.A. Ray's work as well as through Margaret Ray's photographs, because she did photograph quite a great deal. However, the films of the photographs that she took were never developed, interestingly enough. And so only, and this was during Louise Borden's research for her book, which came out in 2005, on their wartime escape, that they developed the films. And you see, you know, she looking at Paris through her camera lens and he looking at Paris through his drawings. It's a fabulous partnership between the two of them. It's an exciting time. I mean, they're there for in 1937 for the World Expo in Paris, which is an incredible event. He works at the World Expo for the Brazilian pavilion there. You know, this is like, you know, we're talking about the last international expo in Paris, you know, when you have the Nazi pavilion and the Russian pavilion, the Soviet, you know, and these two mammoth political entities going head to head. You know, Picasso is exhibiting the Guernica in the 1937 pavilion affair. So it's just, it's a very exciting time, and they're sucking it all in. They're absorbing all of this. They're going to the movies, they're going to museums. Definitely, you know, they had a very productive, prolific time while they were in France.
No Curious George yet, but that would come soon. Claudia Nassen, please stand by. Claudia Nassen is curator of the Jewish Museum in New York. Their new exhibit is Curious George Saves the Day, The Art of Margaret and H.A. Ray. The heart of it is a story of escape. Of course, Nazi army eventually headed into Paris. Louise Borden, as Claudia mentioned, has told that story in her book, The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. She joins us now from Washington. Louise Borden, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Tell us about when and how this remarkable couple escaped from the Nazi onslaught in Paris.
Well, I think it was a remarkable time in 1939 when the war broke out, that then we had the phony war going on in Europe, because most of the fighting was in Poland, but the rest of Western Europe was, you know, kind of aligning their armies to face each other on the Maginot Line.
The French line of defense.
Yes, a line of defense. And I think that most people in France thought that their army was going to be invincible, and that if the Germans encroached onto their territory, that the French would be victorious. So I don't think there was a dread of war and the darkening shadow, but I don't think that people in France thought that the defeat of France was going to be accomplished so quickly. And when the German army went into the neutral countries of Holland and Belgium in May of 1940, Margaret and Hans, who had been living in Paris, were staying in Avranches, a town in Normandy, and working on some of their manuscripts at that time. And then they got back to Paris and realized that they, too, would have to flee, even though they had Brazilian passports, which were going to be very crucial in their escape. They still were at risk, because being German-born Jews, after the armistice of France with Germany in late June of 1940, foreign Jews were being rounded up and deported. So I don't think those Brazilian passports would have helped them that much.
Early June 1940, the Nazis are pouring into France, headed for Paris. The roads are clogged with people headed south to get away from them. In fact, by the time H.A. Ray heads to the bicycle shop to get a bicycle, there's not much left, you remind us in your book.
Yes, yes. And I have studied this time period in history, so I knew about the Great Exodus from Paris, that 5 million people were on the roads of France. These were refugees from other countries also, not just French refugees. And when I read a snippet of text in 1995 that they had been in this great motorized evacuation, I knew a lot of the history of that period, and I'd written several other books about World War II. So I started looking for another book that would tell me this story. I was fascinated by the Rays, and there wasn't a book there. So I had to become a pathfinder, and like the Rays, I had my own journey of research. And I had help along the way also with the fabulous de Grumman Collection archives. And I think that Claudia's exhibition now at the Jewish Museum will show the world and show adults the amazing archival pieces, and it's just a spectacular exhibit, and if anyone can get to New York to see it, I highly recommend it.
It'll be in San Francisco later this year when it came time to flee. Bicycles all gone. There was a bicycle built for two. I've read him describing how the Rays tried that out on the pretty much abandoned streets of Paris and just didn't think it would work. He found parts and put together two bicycles, packed into them early drawings of what would become Curious George, Fifi at that time. We'll hear that story and much more when we come back. We'll also hear from the University of Southern Mississippi and the de Grumman Collection, where so much of this information ended up. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the great tale of the creators of Curious George, the beloved children's story, their escape from Nazi-occupied France, and how Curious George came to be. Here's a little bit from a multimedia timeline put together by the Jewish Museum in New York from a 1966 interview with the Rays, H.A. and Margaret, on the public broadcasting station WGBH. Margaret and H.A. explained how they first met.
We both from Germany, but my husband left it in Germany in 1925, while I left it much later. And we met again in Brazil in the 30s.
You mean you knew each other in Germany?
We knew each other a little bit in Germany.
I knew her when she was a child at her father's house, and she doesn't remember it. She came sliding down the banisters, and I was standing downstairs with her older sister. And there she came. That's how I met her.
And then that's quite a romance.
We met again in Brazil and got married in Brazil. And then we went for a honeymoon to Paris. We meant to stay about 4 weeks there. We stayed over 4 years until the war broke out.
Until the war broke out, Margaret Ray there, along with her husband, H.A. Ray, that from 1966. Claudia Nassen is with us this hour. She's curator at the Jewish Museum in New York, where the nice exhibit, Curious George Saves the Day, The Art of Margaret and H.A. Ray, has just gone up this month. Louise Borden is with us as well from Washington. She wrote the book, The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. And right now we're joined from Jackson, Mississippi, by Ellen Ruffin. She's curator of the de Grumman Children's Literature Collection at the University of Southern Mississippi. When Margaret Ray died in 1996, her husband had died in 1977, she left her entire collection to the university. Ellen Ruffin, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you. You've got quite a collection of children's book authors' material in your exhibit, not just the Rays, but an enormous collection there.
That's right. We have approximately 1,300 authors and illustrators, original works and manuscripts held at the de Grumman Children's Literature Collection. So the Rays are only one of 1,300.
But in all those 1,300, that story of their escape, the story behind the story of all that made it possible for Curious George to become known to the world, must be one of the most remarkable.
Oh, I certainly agree with you on that. And I think Louise's book and her research and the amount of tenacity that she kept with her at all times in developing the book is remarkable. And actually, the papers from the Rays had come to the collection just a short time before Louise really hit it hard with the research for the book. So the former curator, Dee Jones, and Ann Ashmore, who was also at the collection, were uncovering things themselves as Louise was pushing them to open up more and more. So it's been a great gift to us.
Claudia Nussen, we noted at the top of the show, you got the exhibit opening just a couple of weeks ago, and now we're right into Passover, when, of course, Jews retell the story of escape from Egypt. It makes it, to my mind, feel pretty timely here. These two on their bicycle pedaling out with a story the whole world would come to know. But it's a season, we thought, for exactly this kind of tale.
Yeah, you're right. I think more and more people are making those connections these days. It's funny when, you know, some people have asked me, did you really slotted this show for this time for that particular reason? We didn't have in mind, but it's a great, you know, we're all for connections, and it's great that people are thinking in those lines. Also, I mean, Passover is a celebration, week-long holiday, which, you know, commemorates the redemption of the Jews from slavery in Egypt. And we are basically mandated, you know, one of the main injunctions for this holiday, which people are celebrating beginning tonight, Jews around the country and around the world, is that every Jew should feel as he or she has personally experienced this journey and also understand the story for their own times. And, you know, and so people reinterpret the story. So it's, you know, here is another a modern tale that, you know, can connect to this ancient history and biblical passage from bondage to freedom, because that's exactly what happened with the race. Basically, they were fleeing oppression and on their path to freedom. So definitely there is the whole story. I mean, I think escape and freedom are, you know, anchors in the story, in their story of the Ray, in their art. And I mean, escape is a motif that appears. I think the factual issues, you know, that we're actually escaping because of the political situation. There is the fact that they're writing about escape while they're escaping, you know, which is thinking about, you know, the first Curious George story was written by them, probably started, you know, in Paris in 39. Then they went to down south for the first time, as soon as the war broke out in September 1939, when the Nazis invade Poland, they realized, you know, they're Germans. They're in France. France has already declared war against Germany. It's not safe for them to be so visibly in Paris, so they go down south to, like, the area of Gers, all the way down south.
But the war began to come to them already there. The local gendarme came by wondering, who are these Germans here? Here's the first time Curious George sort of saved them, when he saw the illustrations of this funny little monkey up around the room.
That's exactly right. So, you know, and they were already kind of, you know, creating a story of a monkey on the run while they themselves were on the run, which is remarkable. And also the art itself is kind of an escape for them, I think, you know, because when you look at those drawings, and that's what, you know, people will see when they come to see the exhibition, bear in mind the life story and look at the drawings and see how vivid, how optimistic, how, you know, how filled with life they are for the situation they're in. You know, so it's kind of, you know, it's a total antidote for their situation.
And the monkey saving them the first time right there from the suspicion that these might be German spies. No, they're children's illustrators, and you can see that in the kind of vivid energy of these stories. You can see a gallery, by the way, of some of these images at our website, onpointradio.org. I want to get to that escape. We've got so many callers. Andy in Boston. Andy, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'd like to know, did the Rays have actual things that happened to them in real life that they derived their story from? And also, the man in the yellow hat, has he ever counterpart in reality?
Do you read the stories? Do you know them, Andy?
Yes, I do. Actually, I read them to my children. My daughter's actual favorite color is yellow because of the man in the yellow hat.
Well, she's got to love Curious George then. Louise, you know, Well, first, The Man with the Yellow Hat. I know that from your work and others that H.A. Rey spent a lot of time in that Brazilian sun, didn't do well with the sun. Maybe he wore a big yellow hat when he was going up the Amazon, for all I know.
That's right. Oh. He complained.
Go on, Claudia.
Hi, Louise. He complained about the heat. He was from Hamburg. Hamburg is a city port,
northern.
Cool, in the northern part of Germany.
Right.
So definitely he didn't fare well in the Amazonian heat. So he did wear a hat himself, apparently. And the whole persona of the man, the yellow hat, it's a very gentle, character, very accepting, just there protecting, the monkey, when he needs him. Otherwise, he's just, out of the scene. He shows up just at the right time. He smokes a pipe. He has all the
H.A. himself.
Exactly. Some of the traits of his creator, definitely.
Louise, I wish you'd just lay out for us the steps of their bicycle and train escape from Paris. I'm sure listeners want to understand exactly how they did that. Could you take us sort of step by step, in a nutshell, through that escape, how they pulled it off?
Well, many people were fleeing from the city by bicycle, on foot, by car, in buses. So picture these roads that are clogged.
This is June 12, 1940, when they actually left Paris.
Yes.
And the Nazis would come in, 2 days later?
Yes. The Germans were actually coming close to Paris in the early part of the first week of June, but they hadn't come all the way to the gates of Paris. So people were leaving in stages, day by day. More and more people were leaving until the city was declared an open city by the French government. The French government had left also. Mm. So it's virtually a deserted city. And when Margaret and Hans got on their bicycles one rainy morning on June 12th, it had been extremely hot the week before, very hot weather, which was tough on all these refugees.
Mm-hmm.
So they got on their bicycles. And they bicycled to a town about 48 kilometers south of Paris, a town called Etampes.
Mm-hmm.
And there they stayed in a farmhouse with another refugee. And then they bicycled the next day to a town, I'm probably murdering the French here, Aquabouille,
okay.
Where they stayed in a stable. And then they continued on down to Orléans, which is another 32 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So they bicycled over 100 kilometers to get to a train in Orléans, and from there they kept their bicycles with them on the train.
Right.
Picture that.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on down to Bordeaux,
mm-hmm.
and from there to Bayonne and Biarritz. And
soon they're right down on the Spanish border.
Yes, all the way to the Spanish border, where thousands of people were trying to get exit visas and transit visas to cross Spain and Portugal. And the Reyes were very fortunate. Many were turned back at the border. And, of course, these trains were overloaded with people just trying to escape before the Germans were going to occupy all of France.
Now, their Brazilian passport helped them. Did their drawings help them at that point?
Yes. When I was doing my research, I was trying to double-check and get two sources for each instance because some people have reported things mm-hmm. here and there. And Hans kept little tiny calendars with him, the size of Post-its. And I studied these quite intently for several years. And he recorded every franc he spent and where they went along the way and what he was working on. And as a writer myself, I keep small notebooks with similar details. I don't record what I spend. My husband, I'm sure, wishes I did. But I would write down what I'm, if I'm writing to an editor or if I'm traveling. And so when I found these little diaries written in French, I knew as an amateur detective if I could translate those words that H.A. had written in his small penciled script that I would get invaluable information. And it was from those diaries that I was able to piece together where they went on that chronological journey, which days and what towns they were staying in. And until they got down to Lisbon, which was
through Spain and into Lisbon. And, of course, they knew Portuguese,
yes.
I guess, which
yes.
couldn't hurt there as
and,
well.
Mm-hmm.
Then finally, the ship from Lisbon to Rio. And some weeks in Rio and then to New York where Margaret Ray's sister was.
Yes. She was living in New York at the time, and apparently most of Margaret and Hans's family left Germany, and this information came from Leili Ong, who was the wonderful and very just the fine guardian of all the Ray estate and the foundation, and she was a personal friend of Margaret's. So some information came from Leili Ong also.
Ellen, I was struck by just how quickly, when they hit New York City, they ended up with a contract for this book. It wouldn't be Fifi, the monkey's name. It got changed to George. I guess this was a London publisher who had also fled from the war, met them again in New York, got them hooked up with Houghton Mifflin, the big publisher at the time. And it was really fairly short order that the Rays were published and popular in the United States.
Yeah, it was remarkably quick and easy. Now, that doesn't mean that a lot of work had, you know, there was a lot of work that was laid before the publication of the book in France and in England, because they had publishers in France and England. But Grace Hogarth had moved to the United States to escape the war, and she became their editor at Houghton Mifflin.
And so there they were, seven of those books from the Rays before it would all be over. Curious George, and Curious George takes a job, and Curious George rides a bike, and right on down, Curious George goes to the hospital. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, you're on the air, Mark.
Hello. How are you, Tom?
Very well.
Good. I just wanted to comment. I had no idea the history of these books. It's absolutely fascinating. I've got two boys who are ages 2 and 4, and they absolutely adore Curious George.
So did I. So have so many. What do you think it is about it, Mark, that they like so much?
It's the sense of wonderment that appeals to children, I think. You know, exploring and finding new things and figuring out what they are and how to do them and that sort of thing. You know, they particularly like Curious George Goes to the Aquarium, which... in which George saves a baby penguin from drowning. Of course, I don't mention to them that he caused the penguin to fall into the water in the first place. But in any event, they absolutely love him, and my younger one calls him Curious and George. I don't know how he got "and" in there, but you know, it amazes me the length of time that this character has been popular. You know, you're going back to the 40s here, and here we are in 2010, and my kids are, you know, still going strong with George.
It really is amazing. There's something timeless about this. Ellen Ruffin, you look at so much children's literature there. What do you think it is about this character, this series of stories? It's given it such, durability?
I think that several things contribute to the popularity. First of all, it's timeless. It's a timeless image of a typical five-year-old who is totally consumed with the wonder of life and living, and very curious about what makes things work and how things happen. And Curious George steps right on in there, as any curious toddler would, and some of the results are a little troublesome for him. And every child relates to that.
And very often there's a jam to get out of. That kind of escape theme does come again and again here.
Always. Always. And H.A. Rey, I think, of course, he did the first original seven books. Mm-hmm. And the other ones are different ones that were done after his death. But he was sort of mischievous himself. He had a lot of fun. And I see that through the letters he would write Margaret Rey. He would illustrate these letters. And they were as much fun as the text of the letters themselves, the illustrations were.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the great tale of the creators of Curious George, the beloved children's story, looking at their escape from Nazi-occupied France and how Curious George came to be. Claudia Nassen is with us from the Jewish Museum in New York. They've got a new exhibit there, Curious George Saves the Day, The Art of Margaret and H.A. Ray. Just opened this month, run through August. It'll then move to the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco, and there's quite a story here. Ellen Ruffin is with us from Jackson, Mississippi, and the De Grummond Children's Literature Collection at the University of Southern Mississippi, which has all the collection of the Rays. Margaret Ray gave them to the university at her death. And Louise Borden is here. She wrote the story of that escape from wartime Germany, the journey that saved Curious George. Let's hear a little bit from the 2006 movie, Curious George. The man in the yellow hat runs into grade school teacher Maggie. This is the voice of Drew Barrymore. And her class at the zoo, they're convinced the man in the yellow hat, voiced by Will Ferrell, needs a new name for his monkey.
So, how long have you had a monkey?
I don't. I mean, I
oh,
do.
So cute.
But I really don't. Long story.
Mr. Ted, what's your monkey's name?
Yeah, what's his name?
He doesn't have a name.
He has to have a name.
No, he doesn't.
Let's give him a name.
Please don't.
Elvis, Jojo, Hercules.
No.
Carlos.
Okay, you know what? His name's Washington.
Man, that's a dumb name.
Then call him George. How's that? Happy now?
Oh, I like George.
From Escape from Paris to the book, from the book to the movie, and there's that. Here, again, from the timeline put together by the Jewish Museum is more from the 1966 interview on the PBS station WGBH. Here's Margaret Ray talking about the creation of Curious George.
We were living in France when we did the first Curious George. George was really born in France. As a matter of fact, I tell you a little more precisely, we did a book about a giraffe, and the giraffe took nine little monkeys in. And one of those little monkeys was George. And then a while later, we thought of a book about a monkey, and we did this first Curious George. Never thought of a series. And then over the years, we got so many letters from children saying, what can George do next, and won't you do another book? So then we did another book. And after the second one, we thought, never again, because we thought, generally when you do a series, the first is good and then it sort of
peters out.
But this happened over and over and over. And this latest one, Curious George Goes to the Hospital, is the seventh.
Margaret Ray in 1966. Seven books, more than 27 million sold at this point, and more than seven now as well with those that have followed on, and millions and millions of children who have loved this series. Let's go to Charleston, South Carolina, and Patty. Patty, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just am so enjoying your conversation today.
Great.
And I have children that love these books, especially our 8-year-old Elliot and that movie. But I am curious to know, did the Rays have any children of their own?
Ah, yes. Ellen Ruffin, you can tell us.
They did not. As a matter of fact, on that interview you've been playing, Tom, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, they say that George is their child, and that he's a very good kind of child because he's the one that takes care of his parents in their old age.
Yes, and I'm sure he did with all those books sold, but no children of their own. That's very interesting. But we may have more callers who can tell us something about the Rays and children. Lori in Concord, Massachusetts. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Welcome.
Yes, well, I was a young girl in the early 70s, and we had went to a summer camp up in Waterville Valley, New Hampshire, where the Rays had a second house.
A summer cabin up there, yes.
Yes, right on the golf course there. And we were very lucky that Mr. Ray and his wife took the time to spend a lot of time with us, and we decided to put on a puppet show at one point, and he actually carved the head of Curious George. And I played the man with the yellow hat.
Wow.
And so we had this little puppet show, and they just spent so much time with us, and I feel, you know, they were just such wonderful people, and I wish they did have children because they were very, very good with kids.
Well, maybe you were a little bit of their children, Lori, right there. That's a great story to have Hans Ray himself carve you Curious George's monkey head. Thank you. Tim in Boston, you're on the air, Tim.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Like Lori, I knew the Rays from Waterville Valley in New Hampshire as a child in the 60s, and they were incredibly warm and nice, and I remember things like Mr. Ray would rescue little chipmunks from the woods near their house and sort of nurse them back to health in a coffee can. He had one chipmunk named Coffee. And they also had a dog. They were very loved animals, were great to children. And I definitely remember, even though I was young at the time, hearing the stories of bicycling out of France to escape the Nazis back in the 30s.
Wow, so you got it direct from the Rays, and H.A. Ray with chipmunks in a can. I love that. Let's get another. Schenectady. Thank you, Tim. Schenectady, New York. Mishka, you're on the air, Mishka.
Yes, I am. I'm delighted. I have a variation on this story. My father was a refugee who took the last boat out of Germany and ended up in Brazil. Mm-hmm. We never read Curious George as children. However, we read the Ray's book on constellations, which I would love to know when it was written. It was a fun book on how to learn astronomy. And my dad, as an astronomer, we used this book all the time. It was our coaching kind of book. Do you know when it was written?
Yeah, we'll find out. And thank you. This is a Find the Constellations. Claudia, can you tell us?
Yes. Yes, in the 1950s, he did a couple of books. One is Constellations, A New Way to See Them, or the Stars, A New Way to See Them. Actually, H.A. Ray was, astronomy was a second field of interest for H.A. Ray, which started very early on because he was drafted into the German army in World War I, mm-hmm. Right after high school, basically. He was very young. At the beginning of the war, he ended up serving in the Russian front, and he talks about one of the things that they did, he did for, just to keep himself maybe probably sane and, another escape. Mm-hmm. He watched the stars at night, and he learned a lot by doing so, and he was very unsatisfied by existing astronomy books, and he decided to write astronomy books himself for the layman. That's how what he basically prompted him. Also, the Rays had this wonderful tradition once they got to America in 1940 to do these greeting cards, yearly greeting cards that they designed and send out every year to their friends and acquaintances and colleagues. And many of them actually have the stars as a subject. In fact, one of them propelled him to create one of these books. He had so many interests. Also, he was very interested in wind power, way before people were talking about that so much. And he was even thinking, saying about putting windmills in Cape Cod, something that has been discussed lately. Right. So he had all these environmental interests. Also about, there's a wonderful greeting card, too, from 1974, just a New Year greeting card for the year 1974. And it's very funny because it's just kind of, it's a riff, they're making fun of themselves. They are the 7 and the 4. It's like he kind of made them as a couple on a tandem bike. So it's them, who couldn't manage riding a tandem out of Paris. Here they are riding a tandem, and the gas pump is close. If you remember 1973, 74, the biggest oil crisis this country ever had. So, he had all this interests as well. Yeah.
Ellen, I'm thinking as Claudia describes that, I mean, here he was on the Russian front in World War I. That could not have been any fun whatsoever, escaping the Nazis later during the war. And yet in the Curious George books, there's such a kind of air of joy and almost a kind of hermetically sealed innocence in a way. I mean, George is mischievous, but the world is essentially a bright yellow place. What do you make of that, Ellen? Was that deliberate? Can you tell from their papers if they just made a decision to keep this children's realm joyful?
I don't think it was a decision necessarily. I think it was very much about how they viewed life, both of the Rays. And H.A. was an extraordinary man. I often refer to him as the original Renaissance man because the fact that he recognized the energy crisis. And of course, everything he did about the energy problems in the 70s are certainly something that we can all pay attention to now. And he was a remarkably inquisitive man, always hungry to learn and to grow and to see new things. So I think it was more about him as a person and his whole view of life and the world. He didn't much like being in the army. He didn't like being, you know, in a war. He wasn't big on war, but at night he would study the stars. Mm-hmm. And that's really what gave him more information. That time spent there at night, he couldn't read, he couldn't do anything else, but he studied the stars.
Here's a web comment from Sybil. Says, do you know of any attempt to introduce German audiences to Curious George? I'm a 40-year-old German living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, since 1995. During my childhood, I never heard of Curious George, nor has any of my peers. I only learned about him through my American husband, who introduced all the books to our small children. Of course, they love them, and so do I. That's interesting. I mean, Curious George, I would have thought, would be all over the world.
Actually, it has been translated into German. Not sure the year in which it was translated, but you know, there's an interesting story actually about another book that the Rays worked on called Spotty, which is not so known. I mean, that's also the wonderful thing about the exhibition, that people will see drawings for other books that are not, you know, so
known.
Penguin. Exactly. But this particular one, Spotty, which was actually written by Margaret Ray. I mean, Margaret mostly, you know, she was the primary writer of the text. But sometimes the books were attributed to H.A. Ray alone because, you know, when they came to this country, mostly women were in the field of children's literature. So they were advised to put his name on as a marketing ploy, probably. Mm. But going back to that Spotty book. So Margaret wrote this book, which is about a spotted bunny who's born to an all-white family of bunnies. And, you know, he gets treated okay by his own family, but he's not taking out, not going into, you know, any public scenes because the family is kind of embarrassed about him. Mm-hmm. And he's very saddened by this fact, even tried to, you know, remove his spots with spot remover. Oh. And that doesn't work, of course. And so he decides to leave home. Wow. And lo and behold, what does he encounter? A whole family of spotted bunnies that have one white bunny. And so that who is experiencing the same kind, exactly, yeah, the same kind of experience. Now, this book, which was published in 1945, you know, think about it. In 1945, mm-hmm, just to begin the end of the war, what the race had experienced is totally about discrimination. The book, mm-hmm, was picked up by the United States Army. And Margaret Ray received this letter asking permission to translate it into German, to use it in programs that the United States Army was conducting in Germany for, you know, mm-hmm, quote unquote, re-education of, mm-hmm, Germany, you know, for like, you know, youth learning in post-war Germany. So that's kind of, that's so meaningful. I mean, to me, you know, thinking about them, you know, as German Jews that, mm-hmm, you know, flee Europe because of their identity, and here they are, their own books are kind of showing young Germans a new way of looking at the world.
The story gets more and more interesting there. Dan in Charlottesville, Virginia. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Well, this is something I've wondered for a long time, ever since I came across a stuffed animal of George that belonged to my mom, probably from the mid-50s. And when I finally learned that, you know, from as it relates to actual primates, that, you know, monkeys have tails and apes do not, I always wondered if it was a conscious decision to delete the tail to maybe make George more human or childlike, or if he's actually based on a chimpanzee or other specific primate, if, you know, everybody's just been incorrectly calling him a monkey all this time.
It's a great question. Ellen, can you tell from the archives? Curious George, of course, has no tail. Monkeys do. What's up with that?
Well, I would have to even ask Claudia about this, but, you know, I was afraid this question was going to come up.
What, Claudia, do you know?
Yes, Ellen. I did find, actually, there's a quote early on, H.A. Ray was questioned about this in the press, and he said, well, you know, it all started, you know, you mentioned, Tom, about the genesis of the story actually started with this book about the giraffe
There were seven monkeys there.
Yes, it was Rafi and the Nine Monkeys, has been published as Cecily G. and the Nine Monkeys. Mm-hmm. One of the monkeys eventually, was that Fifi that became Curious George. Here you have nine monkeys playing with a giraffe, imagining nine tails twisted with the giraffe. He said it was impossible. They were like the tails looked like spaghetti all twisted together. So he decided to just like do away with tails altogether. And so he says what my creation is like a mixture between a gibbon and an ape, and it's something that is unique and doesn't really exist.
Seven tails, too much to draw, looks like spaghetti. That's a great story. Yeah. Louise Borden, you know the story of their escape so well. I don't know what was the darkest moment before this bright history that came later. What was the darkest moment of their effort to get away from the oncoming Nazi army?
Well, I think when they escaped in June of 1940, no one knew what was going to be happening in the later years of the war in Germany and in the various concentration camps in other countries. Margaret even said in one interview that she liked the sense of freedom and not having, a lot of possessions to carry with them. But I think certainly they were very, concerned about this, and they were in danger because Orléans and Etampes were bombed several days after they went through. But there were millions of stories of ordinary people on those roads, and Margaret and Hans were not wealthy. They weren't famous. They were ordinary people, and they were artists. And I think that's kind of a universal, these stories happen to all of us. We're all living history now, whether it's in Haiti or Chile or World War II, escaping the German army. And I think... the light shines into the 21st century with their art and the courage that they had during those perilous times.
Well, it's good history to remember today the Rays on their bicycles with Curious George more or less in the saddlebags, and you've all helped us learn and know it. Louise Borden, author of The Journey That Saved Curious George, thanks so much for being here. And Ellen Ruffin, curator of the de Grummond Children's Literature Collection at the University of Southern Mississippi, and Claudia Nassen with the Jewish Museum in New York. Curious George Saves the Day is the exhibit. Thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.